I was talking to an anthropologist one time, and he was telling me about a trend in anthropology, which is that if you're going to go study a primitive village or tribe, you would try to learn all their skills, the weaving, the cooking, building. And he said there was one skill that the anthropologist could never master, and that was hunting. It required a level of concentration, a level of focus, and a level of patience that modern people find really hard. If the tribe had to depend on the anthropologist for its food, they'd all die. And this is relevant here because the Thayachans would often compare the skills of meditation to those of hunting. And they require a combination of skills that we tend not to have in the West, tend not to have in the modern world. And John Cumdy once made the comment, on the one hand, like a hunter, you have to be very still so you don't scare off the game. But you also have to be very alert so you know what signs are that tell you that something's come. And that combination of alertness and stillness is really hard to master, but we've got to master it. We're combining some skills that we have separately, but they tend not to go together. When we focus, we tend to tense up. But here the focus has to be relaxed. When we're trying to be alert, we tense up. But again, alertness has to be relaxed. When we relax, we tend to fall asleep, and here we have to stay awake. So work on combining those, finding the right balance. And it is something you have to do. It doesn't come naturally. Because one of the other qualities of a good hunter is patience. You don't know what time the animal's going to come. So you have to be ready for it to come at any time and be willing to stay for long periods of time. Now this is a patience not just sitting there and doing nothing, but sitting there and working on your alertness, working on your focus, working on your stillness continuously. And here again, this quality of continuity is something we very have to consciously develop. I read a very foolish comment one time by a British professor saying that back in the time of the Buddha, people didn't have the level of concentration that we have now. We have to read books, which means we have to stay concentrated, but they never read books, so they never learned how to be concentrated. Total ignorance. There's an account of a Frenchman who went to live with some Inuit. They were nice enough to build a little extension for their igloo. One day the head of the family where he was staying went out to go fishing. So he tagged along. And they came to the spot in the ice where there was a fish right under the ice, just sitting very still. And so the hunter drilled the little tiny hole very, very carefully, very slowly, so as not to disturb the fish, even though it was in plain sight. Drilled a little tiny, tiny hole in the ice, and it fashioned a hook with a bait that would fit right down the hole and then would spring open once it got under the ice. And then he just stayed there. And the Frenchman watched for a while. And then he got bored and got impatient and got up and started stomping around. And of course, that scared the fish off. You can imagine what the hunter thought. He'd been sitting there very patiently because he knew that the fish was battling with itself. Part of it knew there was danger, but the other part was hungry. And he was willing to wait until the hunger won out over the wariness. And he developed that skill. Staying focused, staying still. And part of that skill is being focused but relaxed at the same time. This is one of the reasons why we work on a full body awareness, a full body concentration. The Buddha's first steps for breath meditation. You're aware of short breathing, long breathing. Then you're aware of the whole body as you breathe in, breathe out. That's the very beginning of breath meditation. Same with the five objects of contemplation in the body. You know, there are 32, or 31 in the time of the Buddha, and 32 at the time of the commentaries. But there are five that are focused on, the ones that the preceptor teaches the new monk. Hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin. The question is, why do you stop with the skin? One reason, of course, is those are the five parts of the body that we see. And our ideas of beauty have to do with those five parts. And you want to learn how to see that even they are unattractive, to say nothing of what's inside. But the other reason is when you end with the skin, if you're trying to keep track of where in the body these different parts are, you're wearing it. It's all around you. And that's the quality of the awareness you want to develop, the sense of what you're wearing. You're bathed. When you're focused on the breath, you're bathed in the breath. Or it might be better to think about wearing your breath, the same way that you wear your skin. There was a writer who stayed with some Inuit up in Alaska one time. And as he went out with them, as he went hunting, he said he had the sense that they were wearing the landscape. Their alertness was all around, but it was focused, it was centered. So you want the center, but the all-around quality around the center too. So work on that. Work on finding the balance between being focused, but relaxed. Alert, but relaxed. So you can maintain this, because patience is a huge quality here. Just as you don't know when the rapids are going to come, you don't know when your defilements are going to show up. You can be pretty sure they will. Because one of the first things you learn as you try to maintain a state of concentration is that there will be parts of the mind that suddenly get bored, because they're used to variety, they're used to stimulus. One of the very first times I taught meditation in the States was to some students back at the college I went to. I'd been invited back to give a talk, and I gave a little meditation workshop. And one of the kids, after 20 minutes of meditating, came out and said he was suffering from sensory deprivation. And that was just 20 minutes. We're so used to stimuli all the time. That's our food. That without it, we feel starved. So you have to learn how to feed off of the activity of staying centered, but with an all-around awareness. And stick with it. Because it's the only way you're going to get to know your mind. Because don't think that when the hunters are sitting there, they're not thinking about anything at all. Or they have no desires. We have a desire here as we practice to get to know the mind so that we can learn how to stop creating suffering. We are creating the state of concentration and we're maintaining it. As I said the other day, it's like wealth. There are some people who can make wealth, but they don't know how to keep it. They squander it. There's those who know how to make it and how to keep it, but they don't know how to use it properly. The ideal person is one who makes it, keeps it, uses it properly. And it's the same with the meditation. And they are separate skills. So learn how to entertain yourself as you maintain this constant state of full body awareness, centered, wearing the breath. Little thoughts that come into the mind, anything that would come in and say, this is boring, this is stupid, this is whatever. You've got to treat them as defilements. You can't side with them. you've got to side with your desire to really know the mind and to master the skills that are necessary for doing so. To be very clear about the fact that these are skills that go against a lot of old habits. And they require conscious work. But it's good work. Because the mind, when it's been exercised like this, really does have a heightened sense of itself. What the Buddha himself called the heightened mind, aticitta. There's a sense of energy that goes with that, and a sense of inner well-being. Because this centered but broad awareness is healing. It's good for the body, good for the mind. And because it's centered but all around. When defilements come, you know. When insights come, you know them as well.